It's time for a Big Blue Kickoff Live.
Nobody can ever tell you that you couldn't do it, because you did.
On Giants.com.
You know what I saw? New York Giant Prime.
And the Giants mobile app.
We'll punch you in the nose for 60 minutes with a relentless competitive attitude.
Part of the Giants Podcast Network.
Let's go out there like a bunch of crazy dogs. Have some fun.
Welcome to Wednesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com and the Giants mobile app. John Schmelk, Lance Meadow with you. Today we're going to talk Notre Dame prospects with Eric Hansen, but first want to remind everybody you can find Big Blue Kickoff Live, the Giants Huddle podcast, and all of our podcast offerings on the Giants Podcast Network presented by Investors Bank. The archive of all those shows can be found at giants.com/podcast, on the Giants mobile app, and on all your favorite podcast platforms. And now, Lance, we're joined by our guest. He is Eric Hansen. He is a Notre Dame football insider, beat writer, columnist for the South Bend Tribune, also ndinsider.com. Eric, thank you for joining us again. I think you probably are longest-running reporter on these college programs we talk to every year. We had you the first year. We've had you every year since. We thank you for your patronage, sir. Hope you and your family are safe and healthy in what's been a really weird year.
I appreciate that. Well, I think that partially means I'm getting old. So, yeah, I was one of the earlier people to get vaccinated. So we're doing good. We're doing really well. It starting to feel more normal around here.
Now, unfortunately, your prize is a 1980s circa Jeff Fiegel's New England Patriots jersey. So I'm not sure you want that, but if you do, we can talk after the show. It's fine. All right. Let's start here, Eric, because I think the one sure thing first round Notre Dame prospect is Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah. We had long conversations last year about a player I think was, you know, pretty similar to him coming out of Clemson, where you have a guy who's listed as a linebacker, but he does so many different things that you almost have to figure out how you want to use him before you draft him. You had Simmons last year, and now I think Owusu-Koramoah is somewhat similar. So how do you characterize him as a player, Eric? Do you see him as a straight-up linebacker? Do you see him as more of a safety linebacker hybrid? If you're an NFL team, what's the best way to utilize all the skills that player brings to the table?
Well, you know, he's going to play a little bit different on the pro level than he is at the college level, but his skills translate really well. Just a little bit of background on him. You know, when Notre Dame hired Mike Elko as their defensive coordinator and Clark Lee came with them, they ran a defense that had a position called the Rover, which was a safety linebacker hybrid. And Jeremiah was the first player that Notre Dame recruited specifically to that position. And he epitomized what they wanted out of that position, a guy who could rush the passer, who could play the run, who could be really good in pass coverage. I think the plus with Jeremiah is his pass coverage is insanely versatile, and that he can, you know, run with a running back, a tight end, and he can also cover a slot receiver, which is what makes him somewhat unique on the college level, in that you never have to really play nickel if you don't want to, or you can leave him on the field when you go to your third down packages. So I think in the right system, he's going to be a star in the NFL. I don't think he's a fit for everyone because of, you know, just different schemes and so forth. But, you know, if you're a 4-3 scheme, I think even he has a fit in the 34. Just his sheer athleticism, you know, even at 215 pounds, just such a powerful, violent tackler, I think people are going to be really happy who drafted him.
Well, to your point, though, Eric, if a team did evaluate his play and said, you know what, we want to utilize him as a safety, you mentioned that he's very effective in coverage, but if they wanted to play him a little bit more on the back end, given how active he's been near the line of scrimmage, he gets after the quarterback. To your point, he lines up with various guys at the line of scrimmage. How do you think he could handle if he was asked to be more of a back end type of player at the NFL level?
I think he could do it. I think unless you're going to play him in the box a lot, you would be wasting some of what he brings. but I think he is a guy that could certainly handle that. Again, when they recruited Rovers, initially they recruited kids that were high school safeties. Now, he played all over the place in Hampton, Virginia, at Bethel High School, at all different positions. So this was kind of up his alley, but I think, you know, other schools were recruiting him as a safety, not as a linebacker. So he certainly has that background. He's seen the game from that point of view. So it wouldn't be a huge leap for him to play back there. But I think that, you know, where you would get your best value is if he were, you know, kind of a hybrid player, or at least, you know, just a regular linebacker. I think you would be, with today's NFL, you would be really happy with the player you're getting.
Yeah, Eric, frankly, he sounds a lot like the way the Giants used Jabril Peppers, to be quite honest with you. The way you're describing him, that's kind of the way the Giants used Peppers coming out of, you know, he came out of school. People were wondering, you know, linebacker, safety, where do you play him exactly? So I guess my question for you then, for a guy like Coromo, the Giants run a multiple defense, but their base on rundowns, on first and 10, if teams, you know, have their two tight end package out there or whatever, is a 3-4. So do you think he can survive in that small box area as an inside linebacker in a 3-4 next to a Blake Martinez? Because you're right, you watch him on tape, he's a violent tackler, but at the same time, I don't think you want him taking on pulling guards either. So how do you think he does fit into that 3-4 scheme in rundowns and in run situations?
Well, I mean, he was amazing against the run, but again, he wasn't inside too much. They definitely had, they definitely could have moved him inside his last year. They were not strong at their weak side linebacker, and they could have moved him inside, but they just figured he's a unanimous All-American at the outside linebacker. He would have been a very good inside linebacker, but not quite as effective. So I don't know. I mean, I think that he could handle that. Again, the way, just the power in his game, you know, just the, Brian Kelly was describing it, you know, he didn't test as explosively at the combine/pro day because he had a cranky hamstring. He still had really good numbers. I think you would have seen jaw-dropping numbers had he been completely healthy.
Yeah, I mean, Eric, the guy ran a 6.813 cone at 220 pounds. That's pretty damn good.
Yeah, and so he showed off a lot of it. I think his vertical would have been higher, for example, had he not had a cranky hamstring, and we would have seen a 40 time from him. I think he would hold up inside. Again, I think he would be a pretty good player. I think probably a 4.3 fits him better, but I think he could handle a 34. He's got some schematic flexibility, and again, I mean, you've got a linebacker that can run with a slot receiver is pretty special. And just how much you see the passing game in the pros, you know, more than you see it in the college game. I just see him as an every down type linebacker, but again, some schemes are going to favor him more than others.
Eric, based on how we're talking about him and his versatility, as well as his ability to take on multiple roles, I'm curious, from what the defensive coordinators asked him to do from an intellectual standpoint, because you got to be a smart and savvy player to be asked to do so many different things on the field, how much did they ask him to pretty much get the defense set? How much was he a vocal leader in addition to what he did from an X's and O's standpoint?
I would say he was an inspirational leader. You know, their middle linebacker did most of the calls. The one thing about Jeremiah is he knew what everybody else was supposed to be doing. He knew how that fit, and he had to, just because of all the different tasks that he was asked to do. You know, he was, again, at times he was blitzing, at times he was covering a slot, sometimes he was covering a tight end. He was involved in the running game, so he was really, really on top, you know. I mean, and again, you get a degree from Notre Dame, you're not usually a dummy. There's not a major where you can hide in.
This is a Miami. You know, it's Notre Dame. Come on, guys.
I'm not going to disparage another school. But,
oh, Fields went to Miami. I'm just giving him a hard time.
Okay. When he came in as a freshman, you know, their hope was to get him on the field, and it was too much for him as a freshman. Now, as a sophomore, he was ready, but he had an injury that kept him out all year. So he goes into his junior year academically with zero career tackles, and then suddenly everything comes easy to him. And so he had an incredible junior year, and then this being his fourth year in school, he was a unanimous All-American. So you can see the growth curve and the learning curve. He is a very intelligent player.
All right, Eric, I want to go over to the offensive side of the ball. My guess that the next guy off the board for Notre Dame is probably going to be Liam Eikenberg. I watched him yesterday, and what I liked about watching him, every single one of his pass protection reps looks the same. His kick is consistent. He gets in position. I don't know what you guys put in the water there for these Notre Dame offensive linemen, but you can tell when a guy is an offensive lineman coming out of Notre Dame, and that's what Liam Eikenberg looks like, just as solid as they come.
He is, and I think, you know, the questions about Liam are, you know, does he have the arm length at, you know, and this is where it's above my pay grade, because as a college player, he went against some pretty amazing edge players and really was very good at pass protection, was very physical at the point of attack in his blocking. I mean, he's a beast. And maybe he's more of a right tackle than a left tackle, like Brian Kelly said on the pro day thing. But I'm sure he'll get a run at left tackle. You know, Notre Dame's last three starting left tackles have been first-round draft choices. Now, Zach Martin moved inside at guard. But, you know, Ronnie Stanley and Mike McGlinchey were both first-round draft choices along with Zach. So, I mean, that string is probably going to end with Liam. Maybe going in the second round, but man, I would take him in a heartbeat.
Eric, the one thing I noticed in terms of his statistics, he committed 14 penalties over the last two seasons. Yep. And hey, listen, mental errors happen here or there. That seems like a lot over the course of the last two campaigns. Was there something to read into that in terms of troubling areas with pass rushers, or was it miscommunication on the line? What at all can we take away from that?
I think the penalty problem was more the 2019 season than it was last season, especially since these stadiums were pretty empty. But what happened in 2019 was, and they got away from it, Ian Book had this thing with the clap, where he clapped instead of, on the road instead of, some other kind of nonverbal communication when they were on the road against teams. And Liam really, and the others, they had a lot of people jumping off sides or illegal procedure penalties in that 2019 season. And they got rid of that whole system of what he was doing. It was throwing off their offensive linemen. So I won't dismiss it totally. But I think there was a lot of improvement in 2020. McGlinchey was like that too. His second to last year in school, he had a lot of times where he jumped off. And then his final year, he was money. So I don't see that as a concern. I think, Liam's going to not have that problem in the NFL.
Was there a specific type of rusher, Eric, that gave Liam issues? Was it power guys? Were guys that were very long and maybe then you saw the arm length thing come in? Was it guys that were really quick off the edge? Was there any sort of common denominators? I'll be honest with you. I watched all the pressures he gave up the last couple of years and I didn't see one, but you're there every day. Was there some sort of common denominator with a type of rusher that he struggled with in college?
I didn't see him struggle. That's the problem with answering that question. I mean, he didn't give up many sacks in his career, and he didn't really even give up a whole lot of pressures. I would say, I mean, maybe a speed rusher, but I mean, he seemed to handle that really well. I don't have a good answer to that question. I think people, again, seem to think that maybe arm length being a little bit shorter than average for a tackle might hurt him at the next level. But I didn't see evidence of that. I mean, you're talking about guys that were first-round draft picks that he went against. And so why wouldn't that have shown up in college? I guess that would be my question to them. But, again, that's a little bit out of my lane in terms of how I evaluate him. I value him as a college player. And I mean, he was so solid. And again, Tommy Rees being their offensive coordinator, I think, really helped him as a run blocker, because then physicality was really stressed with all their linemen. And I think it helped all four of the guys that are going to be in this draft.
Well, I'm glad you brought up the entire offensive line, because as you mentioned, there's a high volume of prospects that are going to have an opportunity to jump to the NFL. So let's stay on the offensive line. You have Aaron Banks, who's mainly been a guard throughout his career. You got Robert Hainsey, who had every start come at right tackle. And then Tommy Kramer, who probably may be an undrafted free agent as opposed to a drafted guy, who also has starting experience at the tackle spot. What's the trajectory for those other three players in terms of where you see their best fit at the NFL level, considering for one or two of them there's a little bit of versatility?
Yeah, they're an interesting group. Out of the four, including Liam, Kramer was the guy walking in the door with the most acclaim. And, you know, probably not as athletic as the other guys, but, I mean, really, really good technician. You know, he played right guard for them this past season. It's funny because his high school reputation earned him some preseason and midseason All-American stuff in 2019, which boggled our minds. I mean, we all thought Tommy was a good player, but not even the best one or two on their offensive line. So you're right about him maybe being at the end of the draft or a priority free agent. Banks was a guy they were trying to get to come back for another year, and he would have been their left tackle in 2021. He's played guard, and he did a really good job. Banks is a guy with a lot of upside. He's a really good athlete. I think he's just kind of coming into his own in terms of getting the technique down. I think that was always kind of the knock on him, was he wasn't as technically sound as some of the other guys on the line. Now he's getting that down, and I think he's going to be even better at the pro level. And Hainsey is a guy that you could, I mean, I think he's probably going to be an inside player in the pros. You know, he got some reps down at the Senior Bowl at center. I kind of like him as a center. He's not as powerful as, like, Liam Eichenberg and really the guards. But he is amazing in terms of being assignment correct and technique. That's why he played, you know, he and Tommy Kramer shared the right tackle position when Hainsey was a true freshman. They rotated. And so you're getting a really smart, really technically sound football player in Hainsey. And again, I think maybe his best position is center.
All right, I want to jump now to tight end, a player that obviously helps complement that offensive line in the run game. And I think we saw Tommy Tremble do that. And watching the way Notre Dame utilized him, Eric, it's like they were preparing him for the pros. I saw him lined up in line. I saw him lined up off the line. I saw him line up as an H-back. I saw him line up go in motion. I saw him line up as a fullback. He can block. He can catch it. I see athleticism. Just give me a thumbnail on Tremble before I have a quick follow-up for you.
Well, he came in pretty undersized. He missed most of his senior year in high school in Georgia with a leg injury, and he got to Notre Dame. He was pretty small. He was 6'3" and undersized, and they kind of envisioned him as a flex tight end, a guy they could, you know, flex out and get into some mismatches. And he turned into this incredibly elite blocker, and I don't think they ever saw that coming. And maybe to the expense of his pass catching, because he was always paired with a really elite tight end. You know, they played a lot of multiple tight ends, as you know. So Cole Kmet was the starter in 2019, and Cole ends up being a second-round draft choice as a junior coming out for the Bears. And then this year, you know, Michael Mayer, which who's probably going to be the best of kind of the modern day Notre Dame tight ends, was tied for their leading receiver as a freshman. And so Tremble didn't get as many opportunities. He had some drops early in the season, but had out of all the Notre Dame players, I think he helped himself the most at their pro day, showing that he could catch the ball, showing his versatility, and everybody knows he can block. So I think he's a really intriguing guy and a guy that's risen on a lot of draft boards, you know, since January.
Yeah, and Eric, my quick follow-up then, I agree. I saw him win down the seam on tape. I saw him win on a couple of little wheel routes down the field. He's running away from, like, safeties. Not just linebackers, like safeties now. He ran a 4.59 40 at his pro day, which was great. So I know his stats are underwhelming, but if you're an NFL team, you pick him in the third round, you think there is significant upside there for him as a pass catcher.
I do. I think his best football is ahead of him. You know, when he can be the number one tight end on the team, I think it's going to help him. And certainly in somebody that plays two tight end sets, you know, he's going to be perfect too. I would buy stock in Tommy Tremble.
I think that's an important point, only because he had just 53 targets over the course of his career, which is not a high volume. So if you get him more involved, considering his characteristics, it'll be interesting to see whether or not a team can tap into more potential. I want to stay on the offensive side of the ball with another offensive target, somebody that dealt with a lot of injury issues over the course of his career while he was at Northwestern. Then obviously he was a grad transfer to Notre Dame, and that is wide receiver Ben Skoranek. This is somebody that's got great size, seemed to have won a lot of jump balls, Eric. I guess maybe there's questions about durability, and can the size maybe make up for what he lacks in terms of the speed and maybe some of the other things you look at as a wide receiver. What do you think he can get away with in relying on that size at the NFL level?
Well, Ben seems to think he's faster than people think he is, and he wanted to show that off at Pro Day. And like you mentioned, he had a minor injury that kept him from being able to do the 40 and show people whether he was faster. You know, and he had some minor injuries this year with Notre Dame. So I think the durability is definitely going to be something people look at. I mean, it was almost like he was a tight end. I mean, he's a big kid. He's 6'3". He's got some heft to him. You know, and in, against certain teams, he was a real matchup problem. I think Notre Dame, he would have been more dangerous had Notre Dame had somebody that was an elite speed receiver, like, let's say, Will Fuller was on this team and Skoranek was able to play into the boundary. I think that would have helped Ben a lot. The fact that both of their outside receivers weren't speed burners and they were bigger receivers, I don't think complemented what Ben could bring to the table. I think he's an interesting late-round guy. Again, we only saw him for a year, but, you know, again, there were teams that he was a real problem for. And I'll tell you what, I mean, he's not afraid to lay somebody out blocking them, both those receivers. Javon McKinley, also really good blockers. I know that's maybe not as important at the NFL level, but it's a really nice quality to have.
All right, I want to go to the guy that was throwing them the ball. You know, people wouldn't think about it, but Ian Book, I think the winningest quarterback in program history, right, for Notre Dame. Eric, how do you think his skill set transfers to the NFL? How do you see him fitting in? One comparison I've heard, I think, was Colt McCoy, who's basically had like a 12-year NFL career as a backup. So is that kind of how you see Book heading into the NFL, or do you think he can carve out a role as a starter if a team uses him the right way?
I don't know. I see him more as a backup. You know, there's a lot to like about Ian Book. I mean, his toughness, his smarts. He's really pretty athletic. He ran a really fast 40, tested very well with the vertical jump and so forth. I mean, if you're looking, if you get have a starting quarterback that's a really good athlete, that's somebody you might want to look at with Ian Book, because you'd be running kind of the same offense with him if there were an injury. I just don't know that he has the deep passing game to complement his other skills in the pros. And that was kind of the issue at Notre Dame, especially against the big-time opponents, was he wasn't consistent enough with the deep ball, maybe didn't have the arm strength. Again, we're talking about a kid that's 6 foot. So, you know, it sounds like I'm downgrading him. I'm just trying to be realistic about how his game translates. And I would not draft him certainly high. I think a late-round pick would be really appropriate for Ian Book, and I think he would be an amazing guy to have in your locker room, to have as a backup, but I don't see him as an NFL starter.
Eric, last one for me. I want to jump back to the defensive side of the ball, speaking of maybe some late-round picks who – have scratched the surface, but we don't know necessarily what they could do on the NFL level. You look at defensive end Ade Ogundeji. This is somebody that's got a lot of length. He was just a one-year starter at Notre Dame. 6 career forced fumbles. Seems to be a guy that just hustles and somehow shows up in the box score. He led the team in sacks, but it's one of those things where you say, well, there's just not a lot of sample size here. Was that a flash this past season, or is this just the beginning of what he could do moving forward? How would you best assess what he was able to do in 2020?
Well, I think 2019 he was productive. He just wasn't a starter. Notre Dame likes to throw defensive linemen at you in waves. So they're, you know, you think about the guys, Colin Kareem and Julian Okoro, where they're starting defensive ends in 2019, but Dalen Hayes, until he got hurt, and Ade Ogundeji were guys that were rotating in and giving them really good reps. And that's one of the ways that Notre Dame was able to be so successful is, you know, there's not a drop-off when you go from their starter to their number two guys, largely. It's interesting because Dalen Hayes and Ade were their starters this year. Dalen came in as a 5-star guy, Ade barely a 3-star, and he really developed. This is a guy whose arrow is moving up. I would say, you know, if I were a team that were drafting, I would take Ade over Dalen at this point because I think Ade's going to continue to ascend as a player, but lots of great quickness, really smart player, and a guy that, you know, a lot of people thought would never be an impact college player, and now he has a chance to play in the pros. I'd take him with a late-round pick, that's for sure.
And 35-inch arms, which is something that'll ring the bell for talent evaluators here. All right, Eric, final question for me before we wrap it up. We've touched on a bunch of guys. Anyone that we did not mention, people that cover these teams up close, see things, some prospects that people like us that are just watching them on the periphery, watching them on tape, maybe don't notice. Anyone in this Notre Dame draft class that's draft eligible that you think is worth mentioning that we did not ask you about specifically?
Well, I do think Dalen Hayes may get drafted, and I think he could be a really good player. His medicals will hurt him. He had a shoulder problem in high school that limited his games. He had a shoulder problem at Notre Dame that kept him out for most of a season. I still think he's a really good athlete, an amazing guy in the locker room. So he may be the guy. I know some people got pretty excited when Nick McLeod, their cornerback, ran a 4.37 40, but I don't think his tape matches that 40 time. But he'd be a nice guy to have in the camp. Maybe there's some upside there. He was an NC State grad transfer, so we only saw him a season. But at least he helped himself out with a nice 40 time.
Eric, good stuff, my friend. We appreciate it. And just tell the folks one more time where they can find your work.
Our website for all Notre Dame sports, instead of the SouthBendTribune.com, it's actually NDInsider.com. So if you don't want to read about the Mishawaka City Council meeting, come to NDInsider.com.
Eric, you're the man. We appreciate it, my friend. Stay safe out there. We'll talk to you next year. All right, pal?
Thanks, Eric.
Take care. Thank you.
But don't forget to check out that Mishawaka City Council meeting, too, because I think that's just probably fascinating. You get a lot of Pete Buttigieg talk in there, I'm sure, if you're into that. Mr. Meadow, a very good spot from Eric there. Always good to talk to him. Let's get to your calls now, 973-667-1960. But first, I want to remind everybody that limited Giants season tickets are on sale now for the 2021 season. In addition to ticket savings, membership benefits include access to exclusive events, experiences, pre-sales, and more. You can lock in your seat starting at just $100. Call 888-NYG-1925 or visit Giants.com/tickets for more information. And Giant fans get a New York Giants checking account from Investors Bank with the Giants branded debit card, security features, and discounts at the Giants online shop. You can earn up to $250 when you open an account at InvestorsBank.com/Giants. Member FDIC. All right, Mr. Meadow, before we get to the calls, any quick reaction there to that Notre Dame spot? To me, if the Giants want to do it, I think Liam Eichenberg is kind of right in that sweet spot in the 40s in the second round. I think Owusu-Koramoah is probably a little rich for my blood at 11.
Yeah, especially since I think there's questions about where he would best fit on the NFL level, similar to an Isaiah Simmons, as we talked about at great length last season out of Clemson. So I don't know necessarily if you'd want to put your high pick in a player like that, unless, hey, you sit down with Patrick Graham and he says, hey, I know exactly where I'm going to plug him in. I think that changes the conversation, but I'm with you. I think you really want to define him a little bit more accurately before you put that high of a draft pick behind him. The offensive lineman, listen, John, this was one of the best offensive lines in college football over the last few years, you could argue.
Oh, sure.
They know how to produce these guys. Just look at the track record of offensive linemen that have come out of Notre Dame. You know this group is well coached. You know that they get on the field early in their career, which I like too. You know, all of these players, if you look at how much playing time they've gotten, they didn't just all of a sudden get inserted in 2020. They have been exposed to college football regular season games for 2 to 3 years at least. So I think that's encouraging. This way you draft a kid in the second round, you know, hey, you don't really have to view him as a project where you have to wait for a year or two. You could actually put him in relatively quickly. So I do think that there's upside with most of these players. I would look at a player who perhaps has a little bit more experience at guard and tackle. Now, I know from our conversation with Eric, we were talking about how Eichenberg, he's mainly been a left tackle. People project him to maybe go to guard, whereas you look at somebody who has been moved around a little bit more on the offensive line at Notre Dame. Now, Tommy Kramer, you probably could sign as an undrafted free agent, so I'm not going to necessarily go to him. And Robert Hainsey, you could probably get in the later rounds. Those are players that have been moved around a little bit more compared to Eichenberg. So I think that maybe is the question. Is he actually a tackle, or do you project him more as a guard based on your alignment?
Yeah, just watching him and the way he's 6'6", he's just 302, he's kind of, slender is the wrong word, but he's not like, he's not built like a tank, right? You look at Will Hernandez, that dude's built like a tank. Eichenberg's not that thick, necessarily. He looks like a tackle to me. I know he came in with, I think it was under 33-inch arms, which I know is a red flag for people. I'm sure he could play inside, but he looks like a tackle to me. And that's where I would try to fit him in. And just on Koramoah very quickly, Lance, he reminds me of Landon Collins and Jabril Peppers. That's what he reminds me of. You know, a guy that, you know, especially for a guy like Peppers that has the athleticism to guard some of these other players, but he's very good and a violent tackler. He reminds me a lot of Peppers when I watch him on tape. Now, Koramoah might be a little bit down the road, if he develops, might be better at those things than Peppers, but to me, they would play a very, very similar role on the Giants' defense. And now, Peppers only has 1 year left on his contract, so maybe you're trying to replace him down the road. Who knows? But again, for me, I think 11 there is just a little bit rich. 973-667-1960. Let's go back to the phones, or start with the phones, rather. Jason in New Haven joins us on Big Blue Kickoff Live. What's up, Jay?
Hey, what's up, fellas?
What's up?
What's happening?
Good. I just had three points, and I'll try to make it quick so everybody else will get a chance. The first point, and I wanted your opinion. I know everybody's been talking about Kyle Pitts as far as probably one of the better players in the draft or best players. And I just had a question, and maybe you guys can help me out. So for those who said that Saquon was due to the running back kind of being devalued, and we kind of, I was probably one of those people that said, you know, it was a little too rich to take a running back at two, especially with our own line not being solidified at the time. To me, I feel like Kyle Pitts is, do you think he's being a little overrated, maybe overdrafted, especially being a tight end? Tight ends are in the league that are great. A lot of them weren't drafted in the first round. When I think of Kelce, Waller from Oakland,
Kittle,
those guys weren't first round picks. And I know a lot of people talk about the athleticism of Kyle Pitts and moving them around and all that kind of stuff, but I guess I'm more in the line of, I like kind of my tight ends to be more of the Kevin Bosses, Jake Ballard of the world.
So not as good.
I kind of want
so not as good is what you're saying.
No, I know that, but you know, let's not forget that we won a Super Bowl with Kevin Boss at tight end and Ballard as one of our other tight ends. So I just kind of want to see what your opinion was on that point, and then I have two other points, or do you want me to just go to her?
No. Let us hit Pitts first. I don't think that way, Jason, to be honest with you. And I know they were able to find those other guys late, and I get that. But I think the days of finding those guys late are coming to an end because we're seeing how valuable that position is as a pass catcher and how the tight end can really open up your offense and you can unlock your offense if you have a tight end that can do all those things. For example, if Barkley and Pitts were in the same draft, I would pick Kyle Pitts. That's how strongly I feel about him, and he's creeping. Like, I think we had this talk a few weeks ago where if I had the choice between Pitts or Jamar Chase, I'd probably pick Jamar Chase. I've been thinking about changing my mind on that, to be honest with you. His size, it's 6'6", 240, with his athletic testing, which is the athletic testing of a wide receiver, his hands, his willingness to block. Lance knows this, it drives us nuts. The word generational player gets thrown around way too often, but Lance, I have never, ever, ever seen a player with this combination of skills, production, physical traits, and ability at tight end like I've seen in Kyle Pitts. Maybe Kellen Winslow Jr. back in the day, that was 20 years ago, but this guy checks every single box, and I don't think you can draft him too high, to be honest with you.
Well, he also reminds me a little bit of Darren Waller, and I happen to love Darren Waller because of what he does for the Raiders and his versatility and how he's pretty much a headache no matter who you line up with him. So I look at him as a weapon. That's why when, you know, the caller brought up Saquon Barkley and the whole debate that continues to play out even years after he was drafted, Saquon Barkley, Kyle Pitts, these guys are not one-positional players. They're offensive weapons. And if you maximize what you could get out of that player, you're not going to classify them that way. You're looking at them as somebody who you can move around, you can throw the ball to, you can line up in various places. And I think any team that takes Kyle Pitts that high is not just looking at him as the conventional tight end. They're looking at him as a weapon. Here's the other thing that's important to note. George Kittle did not put up monster numbers at Iowa if you go back and look at his collegiate days. So that's another reason why I would not even compare him to Kyle Pitts, despite what has transpired. Travis Kelce was suspended his sophomore year at Cincinnati. He had some off-the-field issues. And Darren Waller, who I referenced, who was a sixth-round pick, had drug issues, which are well-documented. So a lot of those guys, they turned out to be really good, John, but they had a lot of baggage. I think with Pitts, there's not nearly as much baggage, and he's been an extremely productive player in college.
That's why
I just don't think it's fair to put everybody in the same group.
There's not one bad thing I could say about Kyle Pitts' game. Zero. I mean, there isn't one red, white, yellow, green flag. Pick a flag, any color that I can raise about him. All right, Jason, what's your second point?
Okay, two more points. One about Daniels, one about the offensive line. So I don't know how you guys also feel about this comp. You guys, of course, can disagree. When I look at Daniel Jones and the weapons we have right now, and I look at him as just an individual player, take away the offensive line, take away the receivers, the backs, and all that. When I look at him, and you guys may disagree, but when I look at him, I kind of want to model, not me, I'm not a coach, so this is my opinion. I kind of go back and forth with comping him with Ryan Tannehill, and before people jump on me, when I say that comp, I mean in terms of how I think the offense should be played with Jones this year. There should be lots of motion, lots of play action, keeping his reads fast and simple, and just let him throw. I think a lot of times he held onto the ball too long. So when I say in the mold of Ryan Tannehill, I mean in terms of how Tennessee uses him. I know they have different offenses, different weapons over there, different offensive lines, but I would kind of like to see the Giants kind of use him in that mold.
Jason, I think that is a perfect comparison. And I know some Giant fans, to your point, would probably get, Ryan Tannehill, are you kidding me? Ryan Tannehill made the freaking Pro Bowl last year, okay? In that offense, he's very effective. He was a first-round pick, and yeah, I'm on board with that, Lance. If they want to stack their offense the way Tennessee does, where you have that great running back, you kind of do everything off of that, you run play action, you have, you know, a big-time wide receiver, Kenny Golladay versus A.J. Brown, you make some big plays down the field. Oh, how about Darius Slayton and Will Fuller? Will Fuller is a Houston, pardon me. But, you know, and then you Corey Davis there, who can, you know, compare to some of the guys the Giants have. So I think that's what you're looking at in terms of, yeah, I mean, I'm on board with that. I think I would not be shocked if that's exactly how the Giants want to run their offense and kind of use Jones the way Tennessee uses Tannehill. And both guys are mobile too, by the way.
Well, and also the Titans have utilized the tight end position very effectively.
Sure.
And they've had a mix and match of different personnel because of injuries. And you look at what the Giants have, they have a lot of different tight ends. But I don't really think that's a surprise, because if you look at Jason Garrett and his track record, even going back to the Cowboys, he utilized a lot of tight ends in Dallas. Clearly, Jason Witten was the top of the list. They emphasized the run game, and those are two principles that I think Tennessee has emphasized ever since Tannehill came about. It's also interesting, if you just look at the trajectory of Ryan Tannehill, remember, he walked into a Miami situation where there wasn't a lot of stability and not good offensive line play, and that's why environment is just as important as the quarterback skill set. Tannehill's probably the poster child of that. You give a quarterback stability, a good offensive line, a run game, you see, quarterback can be very productive. So I think the Giants have the personnel to do that, but once again, I don't think it's a stretch, because I think Jason Garrett relies on the features of the Tennessee offense that we've seen over the last few years.
Jason, point number three.
All right, and thanks for letting me go through all my points.
Yep.
The last one, listening to the Notre Dame young man who you guys were just talking to.
Well, he called himself an old man, but it's okay.
I forgot his name.
So that's Eric Hansen. It's okay.
He was that memorable, apparently. Yeah. Yes, go ahead. Yeah.
So when I was listening to him, I was trying to bring him back to the offensive line in the draft. And a name that perked my ears up was Aaron Banks, the guard. I think he had a good career. I watched some of his tape. Like I said, I'm not a scout, but from my eyes, he looked pretty good, strong, big, very good run blocker, very good in a pass pro. Why I bring that name up is because when you look at the offensive line, and I'm sure you guys know as well, there's way more to building a line than just assembling five high draft picks when it comes to offensive line. That's the hardest unit to build in the NFL, in my opinion, the offensive line. And it's been hard for us for probably the last decade. And with that in mind, I know a lot of people have brought up Slater. And while he is a really good player in the draft, I don't know how you guys feel about drafting another top, you know, borderline top 10 offensive lineman. To me, he doesn't screen tackle. I know he had a good tackle career at Northwestern. But when I look at the Giants offensive lineman that we draft, outside of Justin Pugh, when I look at Flowers, when I look at Pettigrew years ago, Jumbo Elliott, Andrew Thomas, Matt Peart, Will Beatty, those guys were 6'5", 6'4", 6'6", with long arms, very big offensive tackles. I don't know if Slater matches kind of with the Giants from what I see they draft in offensive tackles. And why I say Slater probably, to me, is probably we should wait, because there's so many good guards in this draft that we're looking for guards, from Wyatt Davis to Aaron Banks to Deontay Brown in Alabama. Creed Humphrey, I know he's a center, but I know he probably has some positional versatility. And I hope on that draft day, if they feel that Slater is the best pick as that best player available, then so be it. Me personally, I'm more of a Parsons or Russo guy, but that's just me. But I just hope that we're not going back to that year as an offensive tackle, because at that point, we're kind of declining some, or we're not putting our efforts into other positions. So with the depth of guard in this draft, I'm hoping maybe we could go pass rusher or linebacker, or if there's a good corner there, or receiver. And just kind of wanted to see what you guys thought about the offensive line and how it's built and not always being built by high draft picks. And then if we could pick a guard up in the second round on down. And I'll take it off the air.
Thank you, Jason. Look, you can get interior offensive linemen outside of the first round. I think Banks, it might be a little rich at 42. I think you can have the, I think a sweet spot for him would be in the third round. I'm not sure he gets there. But yeah, he's a good solid guard, and he's a guy that can come in and compete with the guys the Giants have on the roster for sure. As for Slater, I actually put this up yesterday, Lance. I'm not sure if you saw it on my Twitter feed, and I believe it was Daniel Jeremiah that had posted it, and I gave him a little bit of a retweet, and he posted the measurements and the performance testing for the four offensive linemen last year, Thomas, Wills, Becton, and Wirfs, and compared them side by side with Slater and Sewell. My guess is that this is something the NFL media group put together, because Lance, if you look at the tweet, the font looks very familiar to me and you. So my guess is that this is something that they put together. But Daniel Jeremiah put it up there, and the testing scores from Slater are actually better in some areas, but at the very least comparable to the testing scores you had from the guys at the top of the group last year. Penei Sewell, honestly, his testing disappointed me a little bit, Lance. I was surprised. Just watching him on tape, I expected his arms to measure 34 inches. They only came in at 33 and a quarter. That's fine. Don't get me wrong. But they are significantly shorter than all the guys last year. Last year, Thomas, 36. Wills, 34 and a quarter. Becton, 35 and 5/8. Wirfs, 34. So, and Sewell's testing is his 10-yard split on his 40, his 40-yard dash, you know, and his three cone and things like that. It was worse than the guys last year. But Slater checked in, and look, his arm length is a little bit shorter. He's a little bit lighter in the butt, only 304 pounds compared to the guys last year. But his athletic testing was right with those guys, if not better in a lot of areas. So I think Sewell and Slater are very close. So I do not have a problem picking one of those guys in the first round, because I think either one of those guys can be a Pro Bowl, All-Pro caliber lineman. But if you don't go there, you can find an interior offensive lineman or even an offensive tackle in this draft, frankly, in the second round. But you can find the guard to help compete in rounds 2, 3, or 4 if you pick the right guy.
Banks, interestingly, also is going to be coming in as a rookie at 24 years old, which is on the older side
good
compared
point
to other prospects. So, I mean, that's something to take into consideration. It's not to say that you shouldn't draft a 24-year-old guy, but you just wonder, is he going to branch out that much more at age 24 compared to some other younger prospects? But he's got a lot of starting experience, 13 games 2019, 12 games this past season, even started 6 in 2018. I mean, they looked at him as the replacement for Quentin Nelson, who was drafted very high to the Indianapolis Colts. And he's mainly been a left guard. He's got one start at right guard. So you could bring him in and you could probably get him to play both spots. And he would absolutely get reps at both spots, at least in practice. But as far as the point about, are you duplicating too much if you were to take a guy like Rashawn Slater high in the first round, I don't see it that way. See, I would make the argument, if you are a team and you take quarterbacks in consecutive years, you're going to do what the Jets are going to do, which is going to take another quarterback in the span of 4 years. I get it. It's an important position, but I would argue that's wasting resources, because, John, at least you got two tackles on the field, whereas you only put one quarterback on the field. So
well,
I don't look
tackles
at it as, well, you could have done something else with that pick. Hey, if you get two guys at that position on the field, then hell, draft them consecutive years at that position. I don't think you hurt yourself.
Yeah, and the heck with two tackles, you have five offensive linemen.
Sure.
So move a guy into guard. It's a different position, but trust me, if you draft Penei Sewell or Rashawn Slater and Matt Parrott ends up being everything you thought he was going to be, and now he's a guy I don't think you can move into guard just because of his build and things like that. I don't think you want him at guard. But if he ends up being a good tackle and you say, all right, well, we're going to plug and play Slater at Sewell at guard and let him beat the hell out of people in there, yeah, guess what? You're going to be fine. And those guys are both guys at 30 reps on the bench, okay? They're more than strong enough to play guard. They're both pretty big human beings. So that, to me, is not an issue. I'm with you. I don't think – I'm to the point here, Lance, and maybe this is just me having battle scars from the last 10 years of taking calls on this show. You can't duplicate offensive line. I will never come on this show and say, oh, we're good enough on the offensive line. We don't need to add anybody. Because someone's always getting hurt. Someone's always moving on in free agency. Someone's always getting cut. I mean, it's one of those, like, let me put it this way. At the start of last year, if we are having this conversation at this time last year, one of the positions we would have felt best about on this Giants roster was guard. Right? You have Zeitler as a pro that's been here, starting the league for a long time. You know what you're getting. Will Hernandez, we thought entering his third year, could have a breakout season. And what happened? We're sitting here. Zeitler's not on the team anymore. Will Hernandez lost his job midseason. And we think guards indeed now, right? Things change on the offensive line so fast. I don't think you can ever really duplicate there. And you should always be working on that unit to keep improving it, backing it up, getting guys there, and to have depth in case people get hurt. So I'm never not in favor of adding help on the offensive line. That's just me.
No, I'm completely with you. Plus, you look at least if we see what the Giants had to go through, and not to say that we hope to go through a global pandemic very often, but you had guys opt out. So if you weren't anticipating, you may lose a guy. It's got nothing to do with injury. It's just personal choice, medical. And now you have to find a replacement. So that's why having an Andrew Thomas and a Matt Parrott was beneficial, because Nate Solder decided to opt out. I'll give you another example. The Indianapolis Colts, who I referenced earlier with Quentin Nelson, they arguably have one of the best offensive lines in football. But you know what? Anthony Costanzo, one of their top tackles, decided to retire. So now Indy's going into this season saying, hey, we got a hole at one of the most important positions. So in the blink of an eye, things like that can happen that you don't necessarily anticipate. That's why, to me, it's always good to have some depth, specifically at the offensive line. Versatility, I think, is even more important, meaning guys that can be moved around. And then here's the other thing. If the Giants decide to bring in another young guy on the offensive line, I also think of continuity, John, because Thomas and Parrott were drafted last year. Shane Lemieux also came in last year. You're going to have four guys, maybe even five, depending on the volume. And, you know, this group could grow together, which is very important with respect to the offensive line. You look at what Dallas did. Dallas wound up drafting offensive linemen in consecutive years, and then that group constantly got better year in and year out. Indy also grabbed Quentin Nelson and Braden Smith in the same year's draft. So, you know, it's no surprise that those teams that brought in four or five offensive linemen in the span of 2 to 3 years, by the time you got to that third year, you felt even better because everybody was growing together. Everybody was being coached together, as opposed to you bringing a veteran this year, you bringing a rookie that year, and there's a lot of coming and going here.
Look, a perfect example, and then we'll get to the next call. I don't want to belabor the point. Heading into last season, Lance, we'll stay in the division. Which two teams had what most people thought were top five or top 10 offensive lines in football?
You're talking about in the NFC East?
Yeah, mm-hmm. The Eagles and the Cowboys, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And what did their offensive lines look like in the fourth week of the season?
Completely banged up.
They were
unrecognizable.
That's the perfect word. Thank you. Unrecognizable. You didn't see Tyron Smith. You didn't see Lael Collins. Travis Frederick had retired. Zach Martin might have been hurt at that point already. For Philadelphia, Andre Dillard was hurt. Jason Peters was banged up. They lost their two starting guards. Brandon Brooks, thank you. That was the name I was looking for. Lane Johnson was hurt, their starting right tackle. It was a disaster. And it short-circuited a season. There's no single position group that can short-circuit a season like a poor offensive line on the offensive side of the ball. Make sure it's good. So if the player has the grade you want in the first round, pick him. I'm not saying force the issue. But if the guy has the grade, you pick him. 973-667-1960. Just want to remind Giant fans not to miss out on your chance to experience a premier hospitality experience watching Giant games and world-class concerts in a 2021 Giant Suite. As a Giant Suite partner, limited full-season locations are available, or place a deposit for individual games. Call 888-NYG-1925 or visit giants.com/suites for more information. Back to the calls. You're on the air. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Hey, Marty in Anaheim.
Marty, what's up?
Hey, I wonder if you guys have noticed the same thing I've noticed. I've been watching, you know, some of these mock drafts coming through. And one thing that intrigued me, though, is I've been watching now for about a month. And this kid from Stanford, Davis Mills, he seems to be skyrocketing up the draft boards.
He will be a day two pick, Marty.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking also. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the other thing I wanted to talk to John about was, John, I really enjoyed that Huddle podcast you had with Eric Crocker.
Oh, he was great, right?
Oh, man, I think he got vaccinated with a phonograph needle because he just kept going.
He had energy.
Yep, he was really good. I hope you get a few more guys like that, that they give a player's perspective and you know, they're in the trenches dealing with it, so, you know, they're giving you first-hand information.
No, I appreciate that, Marty. For the folks that didn't see it, I had Eric Crocker, who had a cup of coffee in the league with the Jets as a defensive back, won an arena football championship playing DB, and he basically did a hardcore deep dive into the wide receiver and cornerback classes in the draft. So that was a lot of fun. And you're right, Marty. The reason I like to talk about guys like him is that he knows what to look for, so he knows what's really important in terms of, you know, skill sets of transferring it onto the field. So I learned a lot. I thought it was very valuable.
Yeah, it definitely was. Okay, fellas, have a good rest of the day.
Thank you, Marty. I appreciate it.
All right, you too.
You know, Davis Mills is interesting, and Stanford has another interesting player, Lance. I know we didn't do that draft prospect thing yet, so I don't mean to put you on the spot here. But Mills is a guy that's coming off an injury. And then Walker Little, who is their offensive tackle. He hasn't played in 2 years coming off an ACL because he opted out. He had torn his ACL the year before. He's a guy that I think if he played this year, he might be considered as a potential first-round pick. But he's one of those guys that if teams get confidence in his medicals, he could be one of these day two steals at tackle that you can plug and play just because he hasn't been on the field for a couple of seasons. But he has a lot of ability.
Well, he's also 6'7", too.
He's a monster.
Over 300 pounds, so he's quite the presence in terms of when you can work with that, regardless of the injury history. I'm sure offensive line coaches are not going to complain. And he's really in the same boat as a lot of these players who obviously have injury questions or they opted out. Are you getting the same player prior to the injury, prior to the opt-out, or are you getting somebody that is completely different? And it's hard. It's hard to project that, even from talking to a guy, because you really want to see him in a game setting. You just, unfortunately, don't have that luxury. But he's one of many players that I would put in that category. The fact that he, once again, comes from a strong program where David Shaw has done a really good job with players that have come out of that program. He's done a good job competing in the Pac-12. You know, those are things that I think maybe help teams feel a little bit more comfortable in taking players with that type of baggage. You know, just like we were talking about the Notre Dame players. If you look at, okay, Brian Kelly and what he's been able to produce out of that program, and you look at the Ronnie Stanleys and you look at the Zach Martins, I think at least makes you feel good. They may not be Pro Bowlers immediately, but they're coached up. They go through a very similar style of what we're going to demand out of them on the NFL level, and that may be the tiebreaker if you're an NFL executive determining, do you take a guy who's from a lesser program, has upside, or do you take somebody who's coming from a stronger program, comes from good coaching, and yeah, there may be some baggage in terms of the injury. Sometimes you may lean more towards the Stanford, Notre Dame type of player as a result.
Let's go back to the phones. Cole, you're on the air. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Hey, it's Scott, New Mexico.
Scott, what's up, man?
Got a question in keeping with all the conversation today. An average NFL passer rating from a clean pocket is about 108. And when opposing defenses are able to generate pressures, the pass rating drops to about 65. Yeah,
that's why pressure is so important, absolutely.
Right. Do you know what Daniel Jones' quarterback rating or average NFL passer rating was this year?
It will take me a second to find it, but I can find that for you. In the meantime, why don't you get to a second point here? Because it'll take me a minute or two.
My point is this. It goes back to your point, John. What is going to make Daniel Jones better this year? You have two guys coming back, plus another pass rusher coming back to the defense. You have Lorenzo Carter. You got Odenebo, and you also have O'Shane Zimenez. What is the greater risk, going for a defensive pass rusher, because obviously the Giants need that, or cementing the offensive line? If you had to choose between one or the other, and your whole goal is to make Daniel Jones better in the offense, you already have enough weapons. If I hear any more about Kyle Pitts, I think I'm going to start shooting heroin, because frankly speaking, we're not going to get him. I think it's time to realize you have enough weapons. You have Galladay, you have Rudolph, you have Slayton, you have Shepard. What else do you need? You're going to have Saquon Barkley coming back. My whole key here is those two positions, an offensive line that's stabilized, and then a defense that can generate some pass rush, and you're going to have players coming back to that. So if you were the GM or you were the coach, where is the greater risk? Taking a defensive lineman that can generate pressure or cementing the offensive line so that Daniel Jones is a better quarterback? And that's really, I'm trying to get a perspective from where you're looking at the team and saying, hey, what do I need to do with that 11th round pick?
Well, I don't think there's risk if you go either way, assuming that the player checks out. The defensive lineman pass rusher is going to help you if you think of him that highly and he's checked off all the boxes. I think the better way to phrase it, Scott, if I'm understanding your point, is where do you think the player could have the biggest impact year one to help the overall production of the team? And my answer would be offensive line, because if you've surrounded Daniel Jones with more talent and more toys, then now you want to give him time to survey the field and take advantage of those weapons. So the defensive lineman's not going to give Daniel Jones more time to survey the field. He's going to help your team, don't get me wrong, but he's not helping you in that category. The offensive lineman would. So I think the offensive lineman is probably the best decision to make, because that directly then helps you maximize what you've already done in free agency and in previous drafts. And I've even emphasized Lorenzo Carter and O'Shane Zimenez are still young players. Carter would have been in his third year last year. He only played five games, which tends to be the breakout year. So you hope that he can maybe have another shot at that breakout third year here in 2021. And Zimenez is slightly behind him, but somebody also who could be a good rotational player. So you're helping yourself already by getting players back who were hurt. McKinney is another example where maybe there's not that detrimental need to have one savior on the defensive side of the ball. And I don't think one offensive lineman alone saves the offensive line, but I do think that that could help you get to a point where you allow Daniel Jones to truly take advantage of what was brought into the roster already.
All right, Scott, this is where metrics are important, because to me, I think the film backed this up. Daniel Jones made big improvements in year number two from a clean pocket. That was one thing in his first year that worried me, actually, because he actually played pretty well under pressure, but with no pressure, he struggled a little bit, especially with turnovers. So his quarterback rating, if you want to go by that, was actually higher as a rookie. Went from 94 down to 89. But if you look at his Pro Football Focus grade, now I don't like using grades, I'll get into the metrics in a second, but just to set the standard, it was 73 as a rookie and 90 in his sophomore year. And here's why. The reason his quarterback rating is different than the grade is, frankly, just touchdown passes, right? He had 17 touchdown passes and 8 interceptions from a clean pocket as a rookie. He only had 8 touchdown passes and 6 interceptions from a clean pocket as a sophomore. But he had half the number of turnover-worthy plays. It went from 15 to 8. He had a higher yards per attempt. He had a higher completion percentage. He had a higher adjusted completion percentage, which accounts for drops. He had a higher average depth of target. So all of those numbers got better for him, and his average time to throw went down, so he's getting rid of the ball quicker too, from a clean pocket with no pressure as a sophomore. So I think he definitely improved in that area, even though, again, that touchdown number dragged down his quarterback rating a little bit.
Okay. So say the first two guys are gone, Slater and Sewell. Is there a third option at the offensive line? So I'm leaning towards a guard, but is there a third option that you can plug and play that you would think would be worthy of that 11th round pick so far as the offensive line? Because I'm going back to a point that Lance makes all the time, which is continuity. And to establish, and you used the example of Dallas. The Dallas team got better and better offensively as they drafted more linemen. So can the Giants stabilize and have five guys that can play every single down, you know, with the exception of obviously injuries, and cement that so that obviously Daniel Jones has something to rely on up front? And I'll be glad to take your answers off the air, guys. Thanks again.
Thank you, Scott. Once you get past Slater and Sewell, and by the way, if you made me take Truth CM right now, I think one of those guys will be there at 11. I'm not going to guarantee it. I think, you know, at best it's like a 60-40 shot, but I think there's a real shot that a guy will be there. If I had to guess, I'd say yes, just because I think people are going to be all about the quarterbacks and the playmakers early in this draft.
I think, though, the Bengals will take an offensive lineman. I think they should take one of those two.
See, I wouldn't. I think this is a pretty deep offensive line class, Lance. I think they might say to themselves that we're not going to be able to find a Kyle Pitts in the second round, but we can find a plug-and-play guard. Remember, they have two tackles on the roster. They signed Riley Reiff, right? He's been a right tackle in the league for a long time. They have Jonah Williams, who was a first-round pick 2 years ago. So I think they feel like they're okay at tackle, but they really could use help inside, and I feel like they think they can get a plug-and-play starting guard in round two. No, would it surprise me if they took an offensive lineman? Absolutely not. I think it's very possible. I'm not arguing that point, but I think there is a rationale to pick a playmaker there at five if they want to go in that direction. My point I'll make off of Scott's question is simply Darrisaw and Vera Tucker would be the next two guys for me, and I wouldn't put anyone else in the conversation, but they, to me, are probably a tier below the Patrick Surtain group, the Waddle and Devontae Smith group. I think those other three players are, you know, they would be higher graded players on my fake board that doesn't exist. But would I take either Darrisaw or Vera Tucker over any of the edge rushers in this class? My answer to that question would probably be yes. Though Vera Tucker's closer, I would take Darrisaw, I think, over any of the edge rushers in the class.
Yeah, I like Darrisaw a lot. I mean, this guy...
He's more of a tackle, though. Push not sure
defensive lineman out of the way. He takes them with him.
Not sure how versatile he is, Lance. I know you like the versatile
guys. That's, of course, a question mark. So, you know, you have to wonder, is he going to be a tackle? Do we experiment with him at guard? What side? All of those things, I think, are worthy questions. But I do like what you can work with. And that, to me, is a big starting point. So, you know, that I would heavily consider if you like his upside and he's there at 11. But just getting back to the last question that Scott posed, when I said continuity, that doesn't mean you take an offensive lineman for the sake of taking an offensive lineman. If you feel you get a guard in the second round, then you wait to the second round to get the guard. And you can still build continuity by taking the guard in the second round. There's no law that says you have to take an offensive lineman in the first round. You could still grab an offensive lineman in this year's draft. It just doesn't have to be early. And then you're adding another young guy into the mix of what you already have. So you have to have some justification that when you pick 11, you're not saying to yourself, yeah, we need to have the offensive line take a step forward, but you don't just take a guy for the sake of taking a guy, especially if you're passing up the opportunity to help your team in another department. Plus, you don't know, remember how free agency is going to play out in 2022, 2023. You know, there are other ways to improve your team, and that's why you can't just think within the box of the offensive line, because maybe you utilize somebody on defense that is going to wind up testing the market. You thought you were going to re-sign him, he leaves. For example, Dalvin Tomlinson, okay? They didn't get a new deal done. Well, you may have to think down the road, somebody that could then fill in for a player that may be approaching now the second to last year or final year of their contract. So that's another reason why you can't get so caught up in just the offensive line.
Yeah, pick the best player.
Yeah.
That's it. And look, this team is not in a situation here, Lance, where they're a player away from a Super Bowl or something like that, where you got to fill this one hole and you're set. Just pick a really good player, and they'll find their way onto the field. Maybe the one spot I'd say I'd be really careful about is safety, just because the team is like four safeties on the roster, one of which is young, one they just signed to a contract, and the other is heading into his fifth-year option with Peppers. I get that. But, you know, maybe safety is a spot I wouldn't, and of course, I don't really want to pick a safety at 11 that high anyway. But otherwise, look, you want a pass rusher? Cool. Offensive line? Cool. Wide receiver? Cool. Kyle Pitts, tight end? Cool. You know, I wouldn't pick a running back, obviously, but that's as much to do with the position as it does the players in the roster. But, you know, linebacker? Okay, cool. Corner? Sure. Like, there aren't many positions where I'm going to say, don't go out and pick this guy just because of the position. Just pick the best guy, and they're going to find their way onto the field. Remember how everyone lost their minds when the Giants drafted, like, JPP and Kiwanuka because they had Strahan and Tuck and OC and all these guys? Well, did those guys find their way onto the field and help the team win games? They absolutely did.
You also had players get hurt out of that group, too. That was more of a reason why they needed some of those other weapons. That's why I never get caught up in, well, you have five guys at this position, so you're set. So then what happens in week one if one of them suffers an ankle injury and keeps them out 4 to 6 weeks? So now your depth went from feeling really good to now all of a sudden having some concern. That's why I don't think, if you ask most NFL executives, they don't get too caught up in the numbers game because they realize somebody, unfortunately, is going to be sidelined for a period of time. So let's just take the best overall talent who, if they get on the field, we know they could be impactful. That means if we need them week four, there's no question mark, they'll be ready to go, and you don't have to worry about all of a sudden the production dipping. And here's the other thing. The Giants have dealt with injuries over the last few seasons. I'm not saying they're on an island job, but they have lost personnel at key moments. And I'm sure they're saying to themselves, just because we brought in X amount of players at a position in free agency who also have some injury baggage, which we've emphasized on previous programs, it's more of a reason why you want to insulate yourself there and bring in some other quality playmakers, whether it be at wide receiver, which they've already addressed, or whether it be perhaps at the defensive side of the ball in the secondary, where once again they've also addressed and brought in some depth. You just never know when these guys are going to unfortunately be struck by the injury bug.
And you'll be kicking yourself in the you-know-what if three years down the road, a guy you passed on is like a three-time All-Pro or Pro Bowler, and you didn't pick him because he played the wrong position. You're going to be kicking yourself. So that's how I look at it. Lance, good stuff, my friend.
Absolutely, you got it.
Tomorrow it is Dottino and Feagles. They hit Miami prospects. So you want to hear about those edge rushers, Jalen Phillips, and of course Gregory Rousseau and Quincy Roche as well. Make sure you tune in tomorrow as Jeff will get all lathered up over the Miami Hurricanes and the players they have entering the 2021 NFL draft. And then on Friday, we'll kick it off with some more fun draft talk as well with Lance, Paul, and myself. For Lance Meadow, I'm John Schmoe. Thanks for being with us on Big Blue Kickoff Live, which is on the Giants Podcast Network, presented by Investors Bank. You can find the archive of this show and all of our programs at Giants.com/podcast, on the Giants mobile app, and at Giants, and on your favorite podcast platforms. Find the subscribe, add us to your favorites. If you're on Apple Podcasts, please leave a 5-star positive review if you like what you hear. If you know friends that are Giant fans, tell them about the podcast. It'll help us grow. For Lance, I'm Schmelk. We'll see you tomorrow for another episode of Big Blue Kickoff Live. Until next time, everybody.